Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph. Let me review the Gemara outside before we continue where we left off on Yom Chamishi. And there's a suffix of Rabbah. Rabbah wants to understand the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Chachamim. According to Rabbi Akiva, if a person is standing in Rishus HaYochid, and he throws an object over Rishus HaRabim, landing in another Rishus HaYochid, he's Chayev. And the Chacham says Potter. So Rabbi offers two interpretations of this machlokes. One interpretation is that they're arguing about Kluta Kamisha Huncha, which means that the object entered into the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. Is it considered as if it was Nach in Rishus HaRabim? And if that be the case, then the machlokas only applies below 10 tfachim in Rishus HaRabim. So the object went, he sort of like bent his knees down in a Rishus HaYochid, he threw it very low, you know, below, let's call it waist level, and it landed in another Rishus HaYochid. So Rabbi Akiva says he's chayev, because the object is considered kahuncha, it's as if it landed in Rishus HaRabim, which means that he actually implemented a full-fledged Moleches Hotzah. We're going to have a discussion later on, is he Chayv one Chatos or two Chatos? Because if it landed in Rishus HaRabim, then when it continues into the next Rishus HaYochid, that itself should be a Molech of Hachnosa. But that's a futuristic discussion. Chacham, on the other hand, reject the principle of Kluta Gamisha Huncha, although it's true that the object was flying through Rishus HaRabim, and it was below 10 Tfachim, nevertheless it was never Nach, it never landed, and in Meleches Hotzah, you're not Chayev for going through the airspace of Rishus, but rather landing in a Rishus. That's one approach. Now, Rabbah says if that's the approach, then if Rabbi Akiva's Chiyuv is based on Kluta Kamisha Huncha Dami, would only apply in Lamata Me'asor. But if it was Lamala Me'asor, which is no longer Rishus HaRabim, then you cannot apply Kluta Kamisha Huncha Dami, then even Rabbi Akiva would say you're Potter. And then Rabbah introduces his second interpretation. In the first interpretation, the principle, there are two principles. One is a positive principle and one's a negative principle. The positive principle is Kluta Kamisha Huncha Dami, that's Rabbi Akiva. The negative principle, which even Rabbi Akiva accepts, is Lo Yalfinon Zorek Mi Moshit. And what happened in the Mishkan is that there were two agolos that were lined up, one in front of the other, and each agola was a Rishus HaYochid. It was 10 Tfachim high and 4 Tfachim wide, and it had Mechitzos on all sides. But between one Agola and the next Agola was Rishus HaRabim. And the person who was holding one of the beams, one of the Krushim, would stretch out his hand from one Agola and place the beam into the hands of the next fellow who's in the next Agola. And the beam would go through a Rishus HaRabim that separated between one Agola and the next Agola. And based on that, our mission at the beginning of this perek postulates we'll call it a told of Meleches Hotzah, which is called Moshit. Moshit mi Rishus HaYochid, Rishus HaYochid, Derech Rishus HaRabim. However, in the case of Moshit, we're talking about Lamala Me'asor Tfachim. Right? The Agola was more than 10 Tfachim high. And the Malach of Moshit applies above the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, which in a place which is technically not Rishus HaRabim. In other words, we're going way beyond Kluta Kamisha Huncha. But in the first interpretation of Rabbah, all we have is Kluta Kamisha Huncha. Then Rabbah offers a second interpretation that let's go beyond Kluta Kamisha Huncha and let's apply the principle of Yalfinon Zorek Mi Moshit, that although in the Mishkan the Molacha of Moshit was done by stretching one's arm out, holding the object, the same malacha would apply, and we could derive it in a case of Zorik where he threw the object. If he threw the object standing, he was standing in Rishus HaYochid, he threw it through the airspace above Yud Tfachim and Rishus HaRabim, and it landed in another Rishus HaYochid, he'd be chayav. And that could be, in Rabbi's second understanding, the key to understand Rabbi Akiva. Then why does Rabbi Akiva say Zorik Mishus HaYochid, Rishus HaYochid, Derek Rishus HaRabim is chayav? Because it went above Yud Tfachim, and despite that fact, and there's no clue to Kamishu and Chodomi, nevertheless, Yalfinon, Zorek, Mimoshit. Chachomim reject Yalfinon, Zorek, Mimoshit. In the second shot, Rabba suggests that maybe the Chachom would agree that Mishusayach, Lishusayach, Derek Lishusaram is Chayav in a case of Lamata Me'asora, because even Rabbi Akiva embraced the Shita of Kluta Kamishu and Chodomi. Once we go above 10 Tfachim in Rishus HaRabim, then the only way you could justify a Chiyuv is Yalfinan Zorek Mimoshit, and the Chachamim never accepted Yalfinan Zorek Mimoshit. That's where we got up to on Yom Chamishi. So now, where do we want to begin? Omer Rav Yosef. Let's see if we can just find it. Omar Rav Yosef. We're about halfway through the Amud. And let me just see. Rav Yosef are the first two. Just one second, though. The first two words in the line. I don't know if that helps anybody. Are there any other simonim that we can give? I don't know. See if you can run your finger up and down like the middle of the page on the right side and see if you find Rav Yosef. Hopefully you'll find that. Om Rav Yosef. Ha milsa iboile l'Rav Chizda. The same suffix that we saw in Rabba is Rav Chizda's suffix. Upashta niala Rav Hemnuna. And when Rav Chizda raised this question, apparently in the presence of Rav Hemnuna resolved this question, meha, from the following source, a braisa. It says in the braisa, mirshus hayochid, lishus hayochid, v'over b'shus haravim atzma, and the braisa adds the word atzma, Rabbi Akiva Mechayev, v'chachomim potrim. So again, it's the identical transmission of this Machlokes Rabbi Akiva Chachom with one extra word in Rabbi Akiva, and that is Atzma. So the Gemara says, and this is Rav Hemnuna's argument, Mida ka'omer shusaravim Atzma Pshita lemata me'asora pligi. That the word Atzma means that it went through, the object went through the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, which would only apply below 10 Tfachim. And that's where Rabbi Akiva says Yechayev. And lo yalfinon zorek mimoshit. So the Gemara says, ubimai. Now, let's look again at the Braisa. The Braisa says, mirshus hayochid, rishus hayochid, v'over b'rishus harabim atzma. Well, there's one word that's missing, and that perplexes us, and that's the word zorek. It should have added the word Hazorek Mirshus HaYochid, etc. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, maybe we're not talking about Zorek, Ubimai, Elema, let's suggest another possibility, Bimavir, he's actually carrying the object. Oh, so the Gemara says, that's impossible. By process of elimination, we're going to have to prove that we're talking about Zorek, and we're not talking about Mavir. Why? Lemata me'asora hu de'mechayev, lemala me'asora lo mechayev. If a person carries an object, four amos in Rishus HaRabim, and it's above 10 tfachim, is he not chayev? That's an untenable position. So just to summarize, what the Gemara is saying now, in the name of Rav Hemnuna, is that when you carry something in Rishus HaRabim, four amos, above the height of Yud Tfachim, then everybody agrees that you're chayav. That's not an issue. Now we're going to see that has to do with Masa B'nai Kohas. But before we get to that, so let's say the following. That the Gemara is rejecting the following possibility. Maybe this Braisa with the Rishus HaRabim Atzma has nothing to do with our discussion. Our Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham is about Zorek. But in the case of Mavir, that's a whole different story. Now, what the Gemara is going to try to prove is that Mavir is Chayav in Dalet Amos Yisrael even above Yud Tfachim. But let's understand that although the Gemara is going to prove this from the Mishkan, there's a logically compelling reason, and maybe even more than one reason, why he should be Chayav in this case. And that is because when a man is carrying something, then the object is considered on the ground where he's carrying it. And this is a sugya that we studied back on Daf Dalid, if I remember correctly, called Akiras Gufo Kakiras Chefetz Domi. And you remember the case was that he had a package, a backpack, and the Gemara says that it's as if he picked up the backpack from the ground, even though, again, you know, the Akira starts when he has the backpack on his back, and the Hanocha completes his Malacha when he stops in the other Rishus. He never actually put it down on the ground. But the answer is that Basa Gufo Grire, that we look at his Guf, and his Guf is planted in a Rishus, and in this case, let's say he's carrying it through a Rishus HaRabim, and maybe the actual object is above 10 Tfachim, maybe it's on his shoulders, or maybe he's carrying it in his hand, but it's considered located in the Rishus where his Guf is, where his feet are, and that's a Rishus HaRabim, Lamata Me'asorah. Add to that, the Shita Ben Azai, which is called Mahalech Ka'ome Domi, that whenever you take a step, you put your foot down, and it's firmly planted, you know, even for a split second, on the ground below. So in any event, we're going to learn from B'nai Kohos about this case of Mavir, Dalet Amos B'Rishus HaRabim Lamala Me'asora, but we should just keep in mind that there are logical reasons why, even though the object never actually entered into the airspace of the Rishus HaRabim, because it was only above 10, nevertheless, since he was carrying it, there are compelling reasons to say that he'd be chayav for such a thing. So the Gemara says, "Lo malam yasor lo mechayev." Is it possible to argue that we're talking about a case of lemata meyasora? Va'omer Rabbi Elazar hamotzi masui lo malam meyasora chayev. Rabbi Elazar is going to derive from the Mishkan that even if somebody is carrying above yudfachim a load on his back in Rishus HaRabim, he's chayav. Again, let's emphasize, the object itself was never in the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. He was carrying it l'mal me'asara. But nevertheless, he's chayav. Why? Shekein masa b'nei kohos. We're going to learn, I think it's next week's parasha, about the masa of b'nei kohos. And they would carry the aron. That was the b'nei kohos' job. And they were carrying it in the Midbar. And it was a Rishus HaRabim. Why? Because Shish and Ribui were traveling through the Midbar. And where was the Aron? The Aron itself was they were carrying it on their shoulders, and it was above 10 tefachim. Now, one could argue that maybe part of the Aron was above 10 tefachim, part of the Aron was below 10 tefachim, but that's not so. Rabbi Lozer teaches us that if he's carrying something on his shoulders, it's the entire object is like the Aron in Masa B'nei Kos is above 10 tefachim. And nevertheless, he's chayav. Now, above 10 tefachim is not Rishus HaRabim. But nevertheless, that was the way they carried the Aron. And that is your paradigm for Meleches Masa, for carrying in Rishus HaRabim. Okay, now, El Olav, so now by process of elimination, if this price is talking about a chiyuv, and that's Rabbi Akiva's shita, that it was Mishusayachid, it can't be a case of Masa, because no way, no how could the Chachamim opine that he's patur, because of we're going to derive from Masa B'nei Kos that even if it's Lamala Me'asara, he's going to be Chayav. El Olav B'Zorek. It must be a case of Zorek. And if it's a case of Zorek, and we interpret the word Me'atzma, right, which is Rama Atzma, to refer to the 10 tefachim from the ground up, is who the Mechayev. That's what the Braisa is reporting, that Rabbi Akiva says Yechayev because it's Rosh Mishus Rab Ma'atzma. Do you follow? That only because it's Rosh Mishus Rab Ma'atzma does Rabbi Akiva say Yechayev. Otherwise, why did the Braisa add the word Me'atzma? Obviously, the Braisa is qualifying that he's only Chayev within 10 tefachim. Had it been Lamalami Ten Tvachim, which is not Rishus HaRabim, and therefore the object is not Kolut in the Rishus, the S-base of Rishus HaRabim, Shvamino Bekluta Kamish Uncha Pligi, but above Ten Tvachim, it's not Kamish Uncha. So basically, Rav Hamnun is building a whole world on one word in the Braisa, one seemingly extra worldly Atzma, or Atzma, I should say. And that word is teaching us that lo yalfinon zorek mi moshit. Even Rabbi Akiva agrees that we don't derive zorek from moshit in the case of lamala me'asara. And the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim is only about kluta and it's lamata me'asara. Do we apply the principle of kluta kabishayun chadami? Shma mina, the Gemara says that this is a conclusive evidence, and the conclusion of which is that Rabba's Sufik, and it was also Rav Chizda's Sufik, is that below 10, then we could have a Shita Rabbi Akiva to be Mechayev, and the reason for that is Kluta. The Chacham never accepted Kluta, but everybody agrees, even Rabbi Akiva, the Lo Yalfina and Zorek Mimoshin, and therefore Lamala Me'asara, he certainly is potur. So Gemara says, Upliga de Rabbi Elazar. In other words, Rabbi Elazar has his interpretation of the Machlokas, Rabbi Akiva, and the Chachamim, and the Brice of Me'atzma is against Rabbi Elazar. The Omer Rabbi Elazar Mechayev Hoyer Rabbi Akiva Afilu Lamala Me'asara, which basically means that Yalfinon Zorek Mimoshit, because again Lamala Me'asara it's outside of the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, so Kluto could not possibly apply. And if that be the case, then Rabbi Akiva's logic is that what's the difference between passing a korah from your hand to the hand of the next one who's receiving it, and the case of a zorek where you throw it to his hand and he receives it in his hand. But now we have a real problem, because if Rabbi Eliezer is right And Mechayev Hayu Rabbi Akiva Afilu Lamala Me'asor De Alfina and Zorek Mi Moshit. So why did the Brice have to qualify Rabbi Akiva as Rishus HaRabim Atzma? Why Atzma? I mean, that just confuses us, because that's assumed, that would indicate that we're Lamata Me'asora when Rabbi Akiva's Shita is based on Moshit, which is Lamala Me'asora. So the Gemara answers, V'hai diktoni rishus harama atzma lo diacha kochon derabanan. The reason why he mentions below 10 is not because Rabbi Akiva rejects the principle of Yalfinon Zorek Mimoshit. Nay, Rabbi Akiva would hold, even if it's not rishus harama atzma, even if it's l'mala me'asora, Yalfinon Zorek Mimoshit. But now we have a question about the Rabbanon. What did the Rabbanon reject? Rabbi Akiva has the principle, the ultimate, Yalfina and Zorek Mimoshit. So Zorek is going to be Chayef here, even Lamala Me'asor. And how much more so Lamata Me'asor? That's airspace, which is Rabbanon. But where did Rabbanon come in? You could have two interpretations of the Rabbanon. You could say that the Rabbanon reject Yalfinon Zorek Mimoshit, and therefore you're not going to be chayev in this case of Zorek Lamala Me'asor Tfach Mishus HaRabim, but Rabbi Akiva, but the Chacham would agree to Rabbi Akiva Lamata Me'asor, despite the fact that there's no analogy between Zorek and Moshit for a different reason entirely, and that's called Klutzik Misha Unchadami. It's in the airspace of Mishus HaRabim. So the Gemara says that's why the Braisa formulated the Machlokes in a case of Rishus HaRabim Atzma, to tell me that not only did the Rabbanon reject Rabbi Akiva Lamala Me'asora, and they don't have the analogy between Zorek and Moshit, but moreover, even Lamata Me'asora, where there's another Svara, namely Kluta Gemisha Uncha, even that they reject. So the Gemara at this point, in order to defend Rabbi Lazar, who says that Rabbi Akiva goes as far as to say that Yechayvim Lamala Me'asora, and we derive from Moshit, therefore what we're forced to do in the context of that brisa that says Atzma, is to set up a double machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. They argue, number one, about Lamala Me'asora Yalfinon, and they argue, number two, about the principle of Yalfina, of Kluta Kemishon Chachamim reject Kluta Kemishon Chadami, even though it's within Rishus HaRabim, it's Lamata Me'asar. Okay. Double Machlokis. Upliga Derabi Derav Chilkia Bartuvi. All this is against Rav Chilkia Bar Tuvi. In other words, we had Rav Hemnuna, correct? And Rav Hemnuna certainly understood this braisa literally as referring to Rabbi Akiva. Because otherwise, why does it say Rishus Rav Atzma and then Rabbi Akiva? It must be that the whole machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, as formulated by this price, is limited to the din of the principle of Kluta. So that's certainly against Rabbi Lazar. But now the Gemara wants to be medayek from Rabbi Chilkia that he also rejects Rabbi Lazar. The Omer of Chilkia Bar Tuvi, Toch Shlosha Divrei Akol Chaya. All right, here we have a principle called lavud in fancy Hebrew. We call it lavud from the old country, which means that the karka of Rishus HaRabim goes all the way up 3 tfachim. So that's not kluta gemisha uncha dami. I don't need to come on to kluta gemisha uncha, says Rav Chilkia. In a case where the object flew so close to the ground of Rishus HaRabim, within 3 tfachim of the so-called airspace of Rishus HaRabim, everybody agrees that you're chayev. Everybody agrees that it's considered to be kolut, so to speak, in Rishus HaRabim. Now, it's interesting that although lavud at the end of the day is going to be a halach l'moshe Sinai, but the Gemara in more than one place tries to rationalize this principle of lovut. Now, what would be some sort of rational way of understanding lovut? So the truth is that lovut appears and reappears in many different forms, in many different scenarios, and for many different dinim. But in our context, if we limit ourselves to this lovut that Rishus HaRabim is Oleg Yud Gimel Tvachim, then there might be some element of logic. And that is that the ground is not flat. Again, you could have a ground that's flat if you plane the ground, P-L-A-N-E, but if you don't plane the ground, then in its natural state, the ground has bumps, it has what we call gavshushis, and therefore we have a situation in which the ground, so to speak, covers also the airspace. Okay. However, there are other cases of lovud, like, for example, if you have in sukkah, if you have, let's say, you have a machitza that's made up of smaller strips of defanos that are vertical, and they're not separated by three tefachim, you could have it also in schach on top, that there's no airspace of three tefachim, then we consider it as if it's closed, that area. It's not going to help you to say, well, there are bumps on the ground. You know, if you want to justify lovud, lovud is like, I always like to equate it to tokidei dibur kidibur dom. You know, you could have two things that were said at two different times, and yet it's as if, according to Allah, they were said at the same time because of the close proximity. And the Torah considers that two objects that are within three tefachim, you can actually be so same, you could close the area up between the two. And we don't know where that comes from. There's no question that has to come from Halacha Moshe Sinai. There's no logic for that. Yeah, you could even have a case of a sukkah where the schach doesn't even reach the dofen. But if the airspace between the dofen going this way and the schach going this way is less than three tefachim, we imagine as if the schach is closed up all the way to the dofen. That's kisosum domui. And that's all because of lovut. Okay. Now let's go on. We're still in Rabbi Chilkiah. He's trying to analyze the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. Lemala me'asara, Divrei HaKol Potur. Why? Because Rav Chilkiah holds that Kuliyama lo pligi, even Rabbi Akiva agrees that lo yalfinan zorek mimoshit. And therefore, even though the Torah says that in moshit you'll be chayav in going through Rishus HaRabim lamala mi'asara, that has no impact on zorek. Zorek is a different entity. So what Rav Chilkiah is now doing is he's really severely restricting and limiting the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanon. And that's against Rav Elazar, because Rav Elazar expanded that machlokas as a double machlokas, and they were arguing both in terms of Lamata Me'asar, which is Kluta, and Lamala Me'asar, which is Yalfinon. But not so according to Rav Chilkiah. When is the machlokes? Mishlosha v'yad asara. When the object, as a result of the zrika, enters into the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. Again, if it was below three tefachim, that's a different halach. That's lovut. I don't need to say kluta kamisha hun chadomi. It's actually on the ground, so to speak. But if it's above the ground, which means it's more than three tefachim above the ground, now it's in the airspace, flying through the airspace of Rishus HaRabim, banu l'machlokes Rabbi Akiva Rabbanon, and the debate is going to be whether we hold kluta kamisha hun chadomi. But as far as Lamala Me'asor is concerned, Divya Kol Potur. So if we line up the Shitas over here, we had Rabba who had a Safek. He didn't know how to interpret this Machlokas. We had Rav Hemnuna. And now we add to Rav Hemnuna, Rav Chilkia, that the Machlokas is limited to Kluta Kamisha Unkadomi Lemata Me'asora. And then we have Rabbi Lazar, who expands the Machlokas. It's a double Machlokas. And even in the case of Lemala Me'asora, Rabbi Akiva says Yechayef is Zorek in the same way that Yechayef is Moshit. And now the Gemara is going to prove that Rav Chilkia is right from a Braisa. Tanya Nami Hochi. The Braisa is just pretty much outspoken like Rav Chilkia, word for word. V'toch shlosha divya kol chayev. L'mala me'asore eino ela mishum shvus. And okay, now we have another point about Imhoyu Rishuyo Shalom Mutter. Okay, we'll get that back to that in just a second. But Mishlosh Viara Sora, Rabbi Akiva Machayev, Vichachomin Potrim. So again, if we just bracket for a moment the Rishuyo Shalom, he owns both Rishus Hayoch. So let's leave that out for a second. What it says here in the Braisa is that there are two cases about which there's no debate, there's no machlokis. If it's Toshlosha, that's Lovud, it's already Kemunach Al-Gabe, Kakarishus Arabim, and for sure he's Chayev. Nobody debates that. If it's Lamalame Asora, and you want to raise the possibility of Yalfina and Zorek Mimoshit, the answer is no. No way, no how. Above Asar Tfachim is not the airspace of Rishus Arabim, there's no way, no how you could derive it from Moshit. But within 3 to 10, above 3 but lower than 10, that's the airspace of Rishus HaRabim. Rabbi Akiva holds Kluta, and the Chachom reject Kluta. Now, in the middle of this Braisa, there's a discussion about Shvus, which means the following, that if it's above 10 Tfachim, which means that you're basically throwing the object through a makom p'tur, because Rishus Rabim is only ole yudfach. Now, there's no such din as Yalfinon Zorek Mimoshit. So are you allowed lechatchila to throw something to your friend, let's say, who's in another Rishus HaYochid, if you know for sure the object is going to fly above 10 tfachim? And the answer is no. We're not going to allow that. The Rabbanon are going to say that we're afraid that you might come to the conclusion, in this case, that mistakenly, that you might be allowed to throw something from one domain to the other. Now again, when you think about it, technically, it never went from one domain to another. In other words, it started in Rishus HaYochid, it ended in Rishus HaYochid, and went through Lamala Me'asora. But Lamala Me'asora was in Rishus HaRabim. And, you know, this is like a great way of throwing something to another Rishus HaYochid through Rishus HaRabim. I'll just throw it above 10. So the Rabbanan are going to say that that's Asur. Why? Because even though the Rishus HaRabim in the middle is not really Rishus HaRabim at all, it's only technically Rishus HaRabim on the ground, but not in the airspace. Nevertheless, the Rabbanan are afraid that it looks to you like there's a Rishus HaRabim in the middle. And that if you're allowing me to throw something from Rishus HaYochid through a Rishus HaRabim into another Rishus HaYochid, I might as well come to the conclusion that I can throw something into a Rishus HaRabim. Lamata Me'asor. But here we have an exception. Imhoyu Rishuyo Shalom Mutter. If both Rishus HaYochids on this side and on the receiving end, the giving end and the receiving end, are owned by the same person, so then we're not afraid and the Rabbanan do not institute a Shvus. And again, you might ask a different question, and that has to do with Erev Chatzeros, but Erev Chatzeros really only applies when there are many different batim that spill into one chatzer. Right now, he may have two different batim that spill into a chatzer, but he owns both batim. Now, going through this chatzer, cutting through this chatzer, is a rishus rabbin. And you and I would think, well, he's not allowed to throw it from one bias to another bias, going through the rishus rabbin, because of the shvus d'rabbanan. So Gemara says, no, that according to this brisa, the shvus d'rabbanan was only instituted when two different people own the two different rishuyos hayochit, respectively. But if one person owns both rishus hayochids, then there's no iser shvus. And if a man wants to throw an object from one house to the other, and he owns both houses, and in between is cutting a rishus harabim, and he's throwing it above ten tefachim, it's mutter. And the Gemara is going to have a lot to say about this, because it doesn't sound so kosher, you know. Okay, then. So again, just to summarize, the bottom line in this Gemara seems to be that not only are there more Amoraim that reject this principle, even according to Rabbi Akiva, V'Yalfinan Zorek Mimoshin in the case of Lamala Me'asara, and that was Rav Hemnuna and Rav Chilkia, but to boot, we have a brisa that's pretty much explicit. I mean, I don't think you can get clearer than that. The brisa says, Lamala Me'asara Eina Ela Mishum Shvus. There's no way, no how, that Rabbi Akiva would say Yechayev L'mala Me'asor, because Lo Yalfinon Zorek Mimoshet. However, there was one part of this brisa that we said was a little bit of an eye-opener, and that in certain cases the Rabbanon will waive the Shvus, because he privately owns both Rishus HaYochid. So at this point, the Gemara goes on a certain digression to try to analyze that piece in the brisa. Omar Meir, the Brisa says, Im hayu rishuyo shalo mutter, if he's throwing it above 10 tefachim, from his own private property to his own private property, then he's allowed to do that, and there's no isa shvus. Lema tevi tyuv to de Rav, is this Brisa against Rav? Di itmar, shnei batim v'shnei tzidei rishus harabim. Imagine the following. You've got Reuven, who owns a bias on one side, and directly across, if you'd walk out of Reuven's house, what you're looking at is Shimon's house. On the other side of Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah cuts through these two batim, separating them as it were, and now he wants to throw an object, Reuven, to Shimon, or vice versa. Is Rabba Barav Hunam a Rav? Asur Lizrok Zemizeh. According to Rav, you're not allowed to throw the object from one house to the other. Now, in the case I gave you, they're two different owners, and that's fine. Why? Because we said the Shvus only applies. I'm sorry, we say that the heter only applies if it's owned by the same person. But in this case, if it's owned by two different people, then the Shvus is in full active form. And that's exactly what Rav says, and that's exactly what we saw in the Brisa. And this despite the fact, as we emphasized before, that he's throwing it above 10 tefachim. Ushmuel Omar, mutal lizrok mizela ze. So now, the Gemara assumes that if Shmuel is saying you're allowed to throw it from one house to the other, then by definition, as Rashi explains here, we must be talking about one single owner of both houses. Again, because if you're throwing something to another bias, and there's a shus harabim in between, that is certainly, at the very least, would require an Erev Chatzeros. And Shmuel seems to be saying that you're allowed to do this even in the absence of an Erev Chatzeros. Lo mi boy, that you might be violating an Issa d'Oraisa. For example, if we were to hold, like Rabbi Elazar, at least according to Rabbi Akiva, that Yalfinon Zorek Mimoshit, that this would be a classic case of Rishsayach Lishsayach Derech Rishsaravim, Lom Azogin, it's above 10 Tfachim. So there's no Kluta Kabisha Uncha Dami, that's fine, but Yalfinan Zorek Mimoshit. So we're going to assume that Lamaskona, as we saw before in the Braisa, and that was the Shita Rav Himnuna and Rav Chilkia, there is no such thing as Yalfinan Zorek Mimoshit. But nevertheless, nobody argues that that would be an Issa Shvus Derabonon, because you're allowing him to throw something to someone else's Rishus HaYochid through a Rishus HaRavim. That for sure has to be also the Rabbanon. So how could Shmuel say Muta Lizrok Mizeh Lazeh? The answer has to be that it's owned by one person. Okay, it's owned by one person. And then we go back to our Braisa. And the Braisa says that imhayu reshuyo shalo mutter. So Shmuel reflects what we saw in the Braisa, if we're assuming that both batim are owned by the same person. But Rav here is being quoted as saying, osur lizrok mizelaze. And yet the Braisa says, what's the language of Braisa? Mutter. So how do we reconcile Rav with the Braisa? Everybody with me? Again, just to reiterate, Shmuel is really reflecting this Braisa, because we're assuming, according to Shmuel, by process of elimination, it could only be that Shmuel was matir, lechatchila, if it was one owner of two houses. And in that case, you don't even need an Erev Chatzeres. Comes along Rav and he says, it's Osur. Well, we have a Braisa that explicitly supports Shmuel. The Braisa says, mutter. Which means that if the Rishui is Shalo, it's Mutter. Oh. And now the Gemara is going to introduce an Ukimta. Velav mi Ukimna lahi. When does Rav and Shmuel, when do they have a debate that's only kegon de midle chad u mitzei chad? You have one house that's higher than the other, and he's throwing from up to bottom, or from bottom to up. And here's where Rav is going to insist on a shvus d'rabbanon. So again, he's not throwing it straight across. Let's say, for example, you have two houses that are both dukomati. So he throws it from one roof to the other roof. Rav would agree that that's mutter if he owns both roofs. When does Rav think that there's going to be a shvus d'rabbanon? When it's midle chad u'misase chad. Midle means high and misase is low. Now, why is Rav nervous about the case where one house is higher than the other house? The zimnin nafal the asi lasuye. Because what happens if he tries to throw it from one rishus hayochid to the other rishus hayochid, and for whatever reason he doesn't succeed in doing so, and the object lands in rishus harabim? And when does Rav think that there's a serious statistical fear or probability? When I say probability, I mean it's more than 16%, let's say, right, that he might actually miss his target and the object is going to land on the ground. That's only if he's throwing it in a downward motion. So since he's throwing, if he's throwing it upwards, you know, like you throw a basketball towards the net, then we're not afraid that he's going to throw it downwards. But if he's throwing it downwards, then we have a fear, says Rav, that it might land on the ground. Okay? What happens if it lands on the ground? Not only that, it's bad enough that it lands on the ground, but again, if it lands on the ground, that might be misasek. We'll go get back to that in a second. But what we're afraid is, says Rav, is that he's going to go down to the floor, you know, go down to the ground, and he's going to lift up the object, and then he's going to throw it into into the other bias, which is his bias, that's fine, but the only problem is, now the object is located in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim Mamish, when he's throwing it above 10 Tfachim, and Lo Yalfin and Zorek Mimoshet, then it's fine. And there's no Shvus Rabbanan here, because we're not afraid that it'll fall on the ground. But Rav says that if he's throwing it from higher down to lower, then he may miss his target, and it'll fall into Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, the Asi Lasuye. He's going to climb down, pick up the object, and finish the job, so to speak. You know, he'll just, you know, lift up the object and flip it into the window, you know, in the house. And then he's carrying it from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, Mamish, below 10 Tfachim, into Rosh Hashanah Yochid. So now let's go back to the Braisa. The Braisa says that im hoy rishuyo shalo mutar, that if he's throwing it above 10 tefachim from one rishus hayoch to the other, and they both are privately owned by the same person, then he's allowed to do so. We're not afraid, even according to Rav, that he might come to violate an iser hotzad or raisa. But if he's throwing it from top to bottom, and therefore there's a fear that he might miss the target on the bottom, and instead it lands shy in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, he's going to go a step further now, since he wants to get into the other house, he's going to pick it up from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, which is located between these two batim, and he's going to chuck it into his other house. And in that case, he's violating a full-fledged Meleches Hachnasa. And that's the case that Rav and Shmuel argue about. Shmuel says, I'm not afraid that he'll miss the target. Or even if he'll miss the target, I'm not afraid that he'll be silly enough to make that mistake and take it from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. You know, he's on the highway, Shishim Ribui, and he's going to throw it into his house. That far, we're not going to be afraid of. But Rav is afraid of that. But in the Braisa itself, that's a case where he's throwing it from roof to roof, or whatever it is. In any event, it's above 10 Tfachim, on the same level from one house to the other. Now, by the way, Rabbosai, here, if you don't mind, I would ask you a different question before we read the next Gemara. What would be in a case we have two batim on two sides of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and you stood beyond those two houses, or before those two houses, meaning your feet are firmly settled on the ground of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and you would now throw it above, just one second. I'm going to make it even a little bit more sophisticated, my question. Let's talk about an overpass for a minute. So you own two houses on two sides of a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and money is not an object. So you pay a kaplan to build an overpass between the two. Right, we see it all the time, you know, even in America for sure, but even here in Israel, we have overpasses all over the place. You go on a highway, you know, Kvish Echad, you'll see overpasses. Or let's say, for example, if you go to like Hadassah Hospital, many, many different places where you'll see an overpass. So what would be if he were to throw an object from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and it would land on top of the overpass, or let's say somebody would catch it on the overpass, would he be chayav for Meleches Hotzah, taking it from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to Rosh Hashanah Yochid? So I just want to tell you a secret here, if you don't know this. There's a sheet of Rabbi Yehuda that two mechitzos create a Rosh Hashanah Yochid. You have two batim on two sides of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Each bais has a facade, right, the front of the house. That front of the house is a mechitza. And Rabbi Yehuda goes as far as to say that, forget about the overpass, that's even more sophisticated, but even if you throw an object and it lands on the ground between the two houses, you're chayav doraisa for Meleches Hachnosa. Why? Because you've taken an object from Rishus HaRabim and you've thrown it into the area that is confined or surrounded by two mechitzos. We understand that Rishus HaYochid is four mechitzos. You know, it's an area that's completely surrounded. Rabbi Yehuda goes to the other extreme. He says if you set aside an area by two mechitzos, that generates the status of Rishus HaYochid. So imagine you're on a highway, Shishim Ribui, and you're throwing it from one point of the highway to another point of the highway, and you're Chayev Doraisa. Why? Because that point where it landed, well, for that matter, where you picked it up, if you go the other way around, is a Rishus HaYochid. And I see Steve is shaking his head because he knows exactly what I'm talking about, because it's a Sugya Masechta Erevin. Rabbi Yehuda's famous shita that two mechitzah set up for Rishus HaYochid Doraisa. Okay, so again, let's go over Rav. Rav is talking in a case where he might miss the mark, correct? And he's throwing it into a Rishus HaRavim because it landed on the ground of Rishus HaRavim. That itself is not what bothers Rav. What bothers Rav is that he's gonna climb down to retrieve the object and then complete his original intention by throwing it into his own Rishus. So Rashi is bothered. Why is it that Rav is not worried about the fact that it landed in Rishus HaRavim? You know, if Rav is saying he might miss his mark and it'll land in Rishus HaRavim, that itself is Meleches Hotzah. Why does Rav feel compelled to go a step further and say, V'yasi Lasuye? What's the Yasi Lasuye? Drop the Yasi Lasuye. So Rashi says, and this is a Gemara that we learned at the beginning of Perek HaZorek. No. This is a Gemara we learned in Perek Klal Gadol, that if you throw an object and you intend for it to land two amas away in Rishus HaRabim, and instead it lands four amos away, so the Gemara establishes that that's called Misasek. And that's the sheet of Rava against Abaye, that it's called Maisa Deheter, right? It's not. There's nothing also about throwing something to Amos in Rishus HaRabim. His intention was to do a Maisa Heter, and what turned out is that he did a Maisa Isur because it landed four Amos away. That's called Misasek. So that Rav is not worried about that scenario. I mean, if it would stop there, you know, if he left well enough alone, and instead of going down to pick up the object and just throwing it into his other house that he owns, if he had left it exactly where it was, he would not be chayev a chatos for an averas hotzah b'shogeg, because this case is a case of misasek. Once he goes down, picks up the object, and throws it into a Rishus HaYochid from Rishus HaRabim, that's already a classic shogeg, and he'll be chayev a chatos. Okay, we mentioned Lovud over here, and Bli Neder. We're going to now get to discuss Lovud in a little bit more in depth. Amar Rav Chiz, Amar Le Rav Chizda, Rav Hemnuna, V'Yamri Le Rav Hemnuna, Rav Chizda, Minahan Milsa Di Amar Rabbanan. What is the basis for the principle formulated by the Chachamim Kol Pachas Mishlosha Kil Lavud Dami? That if you throw something through the airspace of Rishus HaRabim below three Tvachim, you know, it's within three Tvachim of the ground of Rishus HaRabim, then you're Chayav. It's as if it landed on the ground, because the ground goes up three tefachim, and that's called lovud. Amalei lefishi efshalol rishus harabim sheti loket bimalaket uberehitni. Now you'll notice that those two words, malaket rehitni, have the same letters to it, because one is the action and one is the utensil, the kli with which you implement that action. So malaket is the action, and rehitni is the object. And rehitni is called in English a plane, P-L-A-N-E. right? Which means something that you use to flatten a surface that needs to be flattened. And that's malaki. That's the action, to plane. And the kli, the object or the utensil with which we use to plane is also called a plane. And in Lashon HaTalmud, in Aramaic, it's called a rehitni. So he says that every single public area requires a plane, which means there's no such thing as a perfectly smooth, you know, public area. I mean, there is such a thing. You know, we could have a highway that was paved, a paved road, but in its natural state, there's no such thing. So if it's not perfectly smooth, then we really need a malaket rehitni. We need a rehitni to do the act of malaket. So therefore, what happens is, the Rishus HaRabim has this kind of a bumps and irregularities, which means that the Rishus HaRabim, by definition, in its very nature, is not ground level. It doesn't really have ground level. There's no natural ground level in a Rishus HaRabim unless you plane it. So the Gemara asks, Ihachi Shlosha Nami. In other words, if your logic for Lovud is three tfachim, and as you go up high, three tfachim, it's considered like the ground space, then what about three tfachim itself? In other words, you seem to be saying that pachos mishlosha, if it's less than three tfachim, then you could say it's kemunach al gabi karka. It's like it's sitting on the ground. But once you hit that bingo, three tfachim, then that's already no longer considered lovut. Now, why aren't you willing to admit to me that you might have these bumps and irregularities that are three tfachim high? So in other words, your justification of lovud doesn't take me all the way around the bases. It falls short because you're explaining it in a way that it should go even up to three tfachim and include three tfachim. And we're going to say that in the case of Rishus HaRabim, it's only up to three tfachim, but pachos mi three tfachim. It has to be less than three tfachim. Vesu. And furthermore, Ihachi, if that's the explanation for Rishus HaRabim, then what about Agav Shushis Shlosha Tfachim, Nami, even three Tfachim? That is also very Matsui. Vesu, and furthermore, Hadisnan, we have a Mishnah in Kashrus of Sukkah that Habonus Sukkah Mishalshel Defanos Isukoso Milamala Lemata. And there we're not going to be able to justify the Lamala Mimata, which means that he's building a sukkah, and he's morid the fanos of his sukkah from the top to the bottom. So let's say, for example, he starts weaving mechitzos, woven mechitzos. Right? Mechitzos don't have to be made of wood or metal, they can be made of cloth as well. And he's hischil larog hamachitzos eitz laschach, the oreg uba klapimato. He comes all the way down, and imhein gvoim mina oret shlosha tefachim psula, hapachus mishlosha tefachim kshera. So the defanos of his sukkah don't reach the ground, and yet they can serve as defanos and validate the sukkah as long as they reach within three tefachim. And once again, we're going to have to say ki'ilu nosaf alev and ishlamu ad lekarka. That would be midin lovut. And what the Gemara is asking now is, in this case, the logic of gavshushis, of those irregularities, those little mounds, which are very much common in Rishus HaRabim, that shouldn't apply here. I mean, he's talking not about Rishus HaRabim here. With Gav Shushis, he's talking about his own private backyard. I mean, presumably he's already flattened that. So this Bali Neder we'll try to pick up tomorrow. And we'll get more into the laws of Sukkah, and we'll see which way the Gemara is going to turn in terms of Lavud to offer something other than just the logic that we've offered until now with the Gav Shushis of the ground of Rishus HaRab. I wish you all a great day.